Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Luke San. Today is Thursday, March 9th, 2017. It is our second class episode of the week. We will be back tomorrow on Friday with our final episode. I know that this episode is coming a little late. Normally I like to record these like in the middle of the night and then have them first thing in the morning. But last night, because the Clippers game finished early, I was able to go to bed a little early. You know, here in New York, sometimes the games don't end until 1, which can mean, with the podcast and everything, you know, not going to bed until 2 or 3. But the Clippers played a little early yesterday. Game ended at 10:30. I was able to go to bed on time, so I was stuck with a choice. Record the podcast for today's episode before I knew how the rest of the games in the Western Conference shook out for the night, or wait and record today. And so that's what I went with, was to wait and record today so we can kind of see how the rest of the West is shaking out, because it sure as hell hasn't been very compelling to watch the Clippers recently. I made this remark on Twitter during the game that this is like one of the least compelling two-week stretches of basketball in recent memory for the Clippers. And I really think that holds true. It's not like they're, you know, I mean, they're playing awfully, of course, but it's not like the Clippers are a bad team compared to like where they were in 2009. You know, they were worse back then. And you see little flashes. Chris Paul makes a nice pocket pass. J.J. Redick hits a three coming off a curl. But just overall, the level of play, the level of intensity hasn't been there. And when the team doesn't have it for so long, you know, and I'm seeing this frustration in the Clips Nation comments, in my Twitter mentions, everywhere. When the team doesn't bring it for so long, the fans really stop being engaged. And that's where we are right now. I mean, it's, you know, it's hard for me. I watch every game, and I'm always talking about the Clippers, you know, the blog, the podcast, everything. It's just hard for me to stay engaged. In many senses, it's like the Clippers are kind of asleep at the wheel when they're out there on the court. They're there. They're actively playing. It's not like they stayed in bed for the day. But it's kind of like they fell asleep at the wheel. They're just not really engaged or in control. And that's how I felt watching the game last night. It's like, it's so easy to get distracted by a conversation with one of my roommates, by something random popping up on my phone. It's like the game just it hasn't been engaging lately. And that's how the Clippers are playing, so I wonder if in a sense that's how they feel too. But it's obvious that the team needs a little bit of, you know, well, I honestly, it's, when the Clippers lose to the Warriors by 8, it's pretty easy to look back and say, these are the things that they did wrong. You know, the Clippers, they needed to switch this pick-and-roll defense better. They need to be a little hotter. They need to call a timeout and stop this run, and they would have had a chance. When you lose to the Timberwolves by 16 and you're fully healthy, there's not like a, oh, here's the quick fix. You just need to play better. You need, you know, I mean, Blake Griffin had 6 turnovers, his passing, all, and it wasn't like, you know, he ended up with some turnovers all night. I was going, Blake, what are you doing? You're just making poor decisions. So, you know, Austin Rivers has played really poorly lately. Jamal Crawford, after saving the Clippers in a few games, was just 2 of 9 with 3 turnovers. But, and the Clippers were out-rebounded, 50-36. So it's just all over the place. Guys need to play better. They need to be sharper. They need to make better passes. They need to make better decisions as far as the shots they're taking so that they can make more shots. But they also need to break out of slumps individually. Then it's kind of infected the whole team. They need to hit their boards harder, which is something that has really consistently plagued them over this stretch. Even when they've been hot, they haven't been rebounding well. And that's like the, you know, the shortest version of it, I guess, but it's just so, it's, you know, it's bad. And I'm not a doomsday predictor. You know, I'm not using a stretch of games to say this team is worse than the Minnesota Timberwolves. This team shouldn't even be in the playoffs. You know, I see people overreacting. I get why people overreact, but you know, that's not me. This slump isn't going to last forever. And if it does, then the Clippers are going to fall all the way to 7th place in the West and lose in the first round. But it's not going to last forever. At some point, they'll figure it out. It's just not going to be very entertaining until they do. And the more time that they wait in this kind of valley of the season, the harder it's going to be for them to climb back out when it's, you know, when the idea, right, is that you want to peak in the playoffs because you know that you're not going to be a great team for 82 games, or at least 99% of teams know that they're not going to be a great team for 82 games. So you know you go through ups and downs, but you want to start really building something good in March and April so that you're hot in the playoffs, or getting hot in the playoffs so that you finally get hot in like the second, third round in the finals. Right now the Clippers are at like maybe their lowest low of the season in the last couple weeks. So at least you can say they're not peaking too early, but they're going to have to start trending back upwards soon if they want to get anywhere near their peak by the time the playoffs roll around. Now, the reason I did wait until today to record this podcast is because there are other important things happening around the Western Conference that merit a little bit of discussion. So first of all, the Utah Jazz, who are in 4th place, who the Clippers are presumably trying to catch to get home court advantage, they beat the Houston Rockets last night, 115-108 in Houston, which pulls the Jazz within 3 losses of the Rockets, which now is starting to get interesting because, as we had once discussed with the Clippers catching Houston, they have 2 matchups left against the Golden State Warriors, and I think Houston and Utah have another game left against themselves. So that could, you know, Houston loses both to Golden State, Houston loses to the Jazz again, potentially pulls those 2 teams into a tie. And then that, you know, that could get crazy if Houston falls all the way to 4. But I don't think that will happen. I don't think Utah is going to catch them. But it's worth keeping an eye on in the next couple of weeks if Houston can start to build that buffer again, or if they really start to look vulnerable coming down the backstretch of the season. The other development from last night in the Western Conference involves the race for the number 1 seed. So right now Golden State, or I guess going into last night, Golden State was still 2 losses ahead of the San Antonio Spurs for the 1 seed. But because after the events last night, now Golden State is only 1 loss ahead of the San Antonio Spurs, and of course those teams still have 2 head-to-head games left. So San Antonio came back from, like, I think 28 or 29 points down against the Sacramento Kings to win by 10. And the Golden State Warriors lost by 13 to the Boston Celtics in Oracle Arena. They only put up 13 points. So that just closes the margin that much more. Now San Antonio is only 1.5 games back with the 2 head-to-heads. And basically, you know, The Warriors are such a bad matchup for the Spurs that those head-to-head games are still going to be interesting. But even if the Spurs can just win one of them, if the Spurs can just win one of them and lose the other one, they might be able to make up that ground against the Warriors in the rest of the games remaining in the season. If the Warriors win both, that's kind of like their ace in the hole. They could play pretty badly the rest of the year, but if they put 2 more losses on the Spurs, which increases the margin to 3 and gives them the tiebreaker, so the Spurs would really have to make up 4 more losses, that would, I think, sort of ice it. But for the Spurs, the focus has to be on really night by night winning the games ahead of them and completing that comeback. And it continues tonight when the Spurs play the Oklahoma City Thunder on TNT, which is a 5 o'clock West Coast game, 8 o'clock East Coast. And that's a big game because it's, you know, at Oklahoma City is not an easy game, but it's a type of tough game that the Spurs are going to have to win if they want to catch the Warriors, because it's the type of game that you hope the Warriors might lose to help you close the gap. The Clippers, in their own right, have another game tonight, right back in action after that loss against the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're playing against the Memphis Grizzlies in Memphis. Memphis is kind of on a similar trajectory as the Clippers since the All-Star break. They've been really slumping. The Clippers are 5-5 in their last 10. The Grizzlies are 4-6 in their last 10. But what's kind of interesting about this game is that if you are one of those tank to the 6th seed people, if you've been keeping an eye on the standings, you've probably been a little less than thrilled lately, because with Memphis and Oklahoma City both going 4-6 in their last 10, the Clippers have played badly, and they still have a small but decent margin protecting them at 5th place. So falling to 6 and 7, they've lost without tanking, essentially. I think the Clippers are 3-5 in their last 8. The Grizzlies are 2-5 in their last 7. They're actually 3-5 in their last 8 too, if you go back 8 games. So it's kind of like a similar slump, although obviously I don't watch the Grizzlies every night, so I don't know how they're losing, but they are losing, that's for sure. Now this is of course always an interesting matchup between these two teams, if only because of the playoff histories between the Clippers and Grizzlies. Obviously with some hard fought series, some tense moments even in the regular season because of the history carried through from these series. But Memphis is interesting because it seems like the Clippers always have this ensemble, like this sort of third string ensemble of veterans who can't contribute anymore, D-League guys who aren't any good, late round picks who are busts, and it feels like the Grizzlies somehow always end up with like the opposite. They've got random young guys like J. Michael Green who are contributing in a starting role, where the Clippers, it seems like they haven't been able to get even their first round picks to contribute lately. They've got guys like Vince Carter, which is like, Vince Carter would be such a Clippers signing, right? Like an Eastern Conference player who was good 10 years ago. But Vince Carter is contributing solidly off the bench for them, and has been for a while and probably will still be in like 10 years. And it just goes on and on. They've got guys playing in their second unit like, Andrew Harrison, Troy Daniels. And these guys aren't all getting consistent minutes, but it's a little bit of a different feel than you get around the Clippers as far as young players, D-League players, and getting the most out of like these really old, past their prime veterans. And what's really been interesting, I don't know that this is necessarily the Clippers' fault, but the Grizzlies maybe might do better than anyone in the league. I mean, we saw last year their roster was so depleted. They had the most injuries like of anyone in any sport ever, or something ridiculous like that. They were playing like entire lineups of D-League call-ups because they were so depleted by injuries, and they were winning games and they made the playoffs. So it's something sort of with the culture there, or maybe with the leadership of like, that Mike Conley, Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen group that's been there for a long time. But whatever it is, it's kind of fascinating. I makes me wish that I follow them closer to see how this sort of roster has developed, because I'm sure that having these fringe players play well and win games presents management with a ton of really complicated decisions based on small sample sizes. But the main guys to watch for are two of the guys who I just mentioned, Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. Mike Conley has had a tremendous year. Mike Conley's just great. Mike Conley's great. But he's been even better than normal this year. 20 points a game, 6 assists, 41% from deep. I don't have it in front of me, but I know there's a couple games where he lit up the Clippers, like, completely. He had, like, 87 threes in 2 games against the Clippers. Let me find the numbers. He had one bad game against the Clippers in early January when the Clippers won against the Grizzlies without Chris Paul and without Blake Griffin. But then going back earlier in the year, he had 30 points, 8 assists, and 5 rebounds on 9 of 12 shooting, and hit 7 of 9 from deep And then in the other game, he had 30 points and 10 assists and hit 7-11 from deep. So he was 14 of 20 from deep in those two November games against the Clippers, which is just like, that's demoralizing for a team. And then the star of the show, you know, probably Mike Conley, you'd say, was 1A and Marc Gasol is 1. 20 points a game, 6 rebounds, 4.5 assists. It's always surprising to me that Marc Gasol doesn't rebound more. But I think it's because, especially as he started stretching the floor and shooting more three-pointers, he's at 39% on the season on 4 attempts per game, so he's a legit three-point shooter. It's not like Blake Griffin, where when he makes a three, it's a little more of a novelty. But yeah, it always does interest me at least a little bit that he doesn't get more rebounds as a center. But he does so much else on the floor, being essentially the anchor for their team's defense, their best offensive player, if not their best passer, their second best passer behind Mike Conley. So he's such a versatile player that I don't think maybe a lot of people gave him credit for earlier in his career. He did have the one game against the Clippers earlier this year where he had 26 points, 6 rebounds, and 6 assists. And he made 4 or 5 from deep, including the game winner. So that stung a little bit. But those are the two main guys to watch for in the Grizzlies. It should be a good game. You know, these teams have both been slumping recently, but you'd hope that if either was to get up for a game, it would be this game, because they don't like each other, they have this history, and they feel like they can win. You know, you think the Clippers might not really get up to play the Warriors anymore because they're so demoralized, even though there's history there and, you know, whatever type of rivalry you want to call it when one side has dominated it for years. But there's some sort of tension there between the Clippers and Warriors. But they might not even get up because they're so demoralized from all the past losses that they're already demoralized that they have to play them again before they play. This is a game where I think both teams have confidence that they can beat the other team. They are the better team. They want to prove that they're the better team, and they don't like the other guys. So that'll be pretty interesting. That's going to do it for today's episode. We're going to wrap this one up a little early. But if you have any questions or comments, you can always tweet me at LucasJHan or email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. To chat Clippers, you can always tweet at ClipsNationSBN, where myself or one of the other Clips Nation editors will get back to you. You can read all the excellent Clippers coverage on ClipsNation.com and leave your comments there. And to follow Clips Nation on Facebook, just type Clips Nation in the Facebook search bar and hit like. Thanks for listening, guys. If you have iTunes, please subscribe on iTunes. Please leave a good review if you do and you like the show. And that's going to do it. We'll be back tomorrow. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.